I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. Together we're the functional nerds.
My name is Patrick Hester. His name is John Anilio, and you're listening to the Functional Nerds Podcast.
That is Patrick Hester. In addition to being a podcaster, he's also an author who has a new book out, Ooh. Into the Fire, Samantha Cain, Volume 1, out through Wordfire Press. It is available now. Go get it. Okay, and there we go. With great cover art. My name is John Anilio. Today, we are joined by Jacqueline Carey. She is the New York Times bestselling author of the critically acclaimed Cashel's Legacy series of historical fantasy novels, The Sundering Epic Fantasy Duology, Postmodern Fables, Santa Olivia, and Saints Astray, and the Agent of Hell Contemporary Fantasy series. Her new book is Miranda and Cal. Band, which is a retelling of Shakespeare's The Tempest, and it is available today, February 14th. Go and buy it. Jacqueline, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me, and happy Valentine's Day.
Yes, yes. Oh, I should also mention that if you want to find Jacqueline online, her website is jacquelinecarey.com, and her Twitter is @jcareyauthor.com. So to put those out there before we get started. And I want to mention before we move into the new book and all sorts of other stuff, I was reading through my blog feed and I just saw a post from Tor.com and it says 8 sci-fi fantasy books sexier than 50 Shades. And Jacqueline's Cashel's Dart book is the third on that list there. Just got to it. So there you go. So awesome. If you want to check that out. There you go.
I'm surprised it's number 3. I know.
Well, I don't think they put them in order. I think more just like here are 8 books that.
So it's not in like order of descending hotness or something.
No, I don't think so. I think it's just 8 out there for you. So there you go. So that. Jacqueline, thank you so much for joining us today. Lots of really interesting things to talk about. We're going to go into our first topic here, which usually are picks. But before we get into picks, I do want to mention, if you enjoy the podcast, enjoy interviews with authors like Jacqueline Carey, consider becoming one of our patrons over at patreon.com/functionalnerds. It really helps us out. We like to thank the people that already back us. It really makes a world of difference, and we're super appreciative of it. And if you dig the show, go and check that out, patreon.com/functionalnerds. And right now, let's get on to our picks of the week.
Picks of the week.
And Jacqueline, what is your pick this week?
I like to have a workout jam TV show. Mm. And the one I just wrapped is Penny Dreadful. Ooh. And I thought it was really pretty darn good. The writing and the acting, the balance of camp and drama and fabulous gothic gore and costumes. It really exceeded my expectations.
Now that's been sitting in my queue for a while, and it's one of those ones that comes up as recommended. I believe it's on Netflix right mm-hmm. now too. And you're like the third person to recommend it to me in the last couple of weeks. Is this sort of like Victorian, and are there like monsters and stuff in it too?
Yeah, it's sort of a mashup. It's very much in the spirit of League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
Cool.
But the TV series is everything that movie adaptation wasn't.
I've burned through season 1. I'm like halfway through season 2.
Okay.
And I'm loving it. And John, for your edification, there are characters in it that you know, mm-hmm. and then there's like some characters that are related to characters that you know, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And Rassilon is in it. Or James Bond, whichever you prefer is his favorite character. Timothy Dalton.
Nice.
He's basically playing, do you remember Mina from the Dracula books?
Sure.
He's her father.
Cool.
But he's sort of an Alan Quartermain.
Yes.
Type character.
Hunter, big game hunter, you know, all this kind uh-huh. of stuff. And yeah. And it's really good. It's really good, John. You're going to like it a lot.
Cool. Is Josh Hartnett
yep.
in that? Is he
yep.
one of the main leads?
And he's not annoying.
I don't know if you guys have ever seen Black Hawk Down. I watched that mm-hmm. A couple year or two ago, and I thought he was excellent in that. I mean, that's a really good cast looking back, because that movie's probably 10 years old or more now. That's a very good cast of guys that went on to star in a lot of other things. Some of them weren't that big yet, like the actor that plays Jaime on Game of Thrones had a small part in that. You have Josh Hartnett, mm-hmm. and you have Eric Bana. That's a very good movie. I thought he was very good in that. I'm like, you know, you don't see Josh Hartnett as much, but now I know that he's in that show.
So. Now I will throw this out. So Jacqueline, you said you finished the series.
Mm-hmm.
Have you heard of Taboo?
I have not.
So Taboo is brand new and it's on FX and it stars, I'm going to blank on his name. He's the guy, he started out his, like, when it was like first was, he played Jean-Luc Picard's clone in that awful Star Trek movie. And then he played Bane in the Batman movies. And he's
Tom Hardy.
Thank you. Yes, he's in it. And people are calling that the new Penny Dreadful. They're saying that is taking over where Penny Dreadful left off.
Okay, cool. It's called Taboo. Thank you.
Yep. I have it in my DVR. I haven't started watching it yet, but I'm planning on it.
Nice. My picks this week are, I'm going to do a little double pick because they're by the same author. And these are the books by Becky Chambers. The first book in the series is The Long Way to a Small Angry Planet. And the second book in the series is A Closed and Common Orbit. I'm almost done with the second book. I'm listening to the audiobooks. And they are excellent. Very different for science fiction, space opera. As I put in, this seems to be a very common review. Nothing much happens in these books. There's no big bad guy. There's no, crazy things. But it's just really enjoyable people on the crew of a starship kind of thing. If you liked Farscape, this is very much in that vein. Like there's different species and they're getting along on the ship. And book two does that thing, which it took me a while to adjust to, where they focus on completely different characters. It's almost none of the characters from the first book are in book two. And I was disappointed for the first couple hours listening to it, but then now I'm enjoying it just as much as the first one, which is what tends to happen. But very good books. I really enjoy them a lot. So it's by Becky Chambers. Again, book one is The Long Way to a Small Angry Planet, and book two is A Closed and Common Orbit. Patrick, what is your pick this week?
Well, John, as I mentioned to you and on social media, the office where I work, the day job, we moved offices, which was needed. It's an updated office. It's much larger. There's more space. But unfortunately, they went with an open office plan. So the wall between me and the person across from me is about 6 inches off of the desk. So you can look straight in someone else's eye. It's very, very distracting. None of the employees are happy about it. But as usual, management thinks it's the best idea ever. Obviously, none of them looked to find out that Microsoft and Google and the places that actually pioneered this kind of office space have now abandoned it because they found out that, you know, productivity takes a shit, essentially, when you do this to people. So it's forced everyone in the office who actually does work to come up with something to keep themselves from being distracted. And I finally took the leap into Bluetooth headless headphones.
Oh, nice.
And I just did a quick search on Google and Amazon popped up with these. They're called Cowin, C-O-W-I-N. They were $60 on Amazon and they work wonderfully.
Cool.
And I like the ones that are over your ears. I don't like earbuds. Mm-hmm. Earbuds bug me. So I went ahead and got the ones that are over the ear. And they have noise canceling, so you know it blocks out all of the weird noises going on in this new open office environment. And they have great sound, just awesome sound. And I'm able to listen to music and get my work done. And they also last a really long time. It said the battery is about 20 hours, but I used it Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday all day each day and didn't have to charge it once. So they're going a little bit beyond the 20 hours and I'm liking them a lot. So, and they were only like $60.
Cool. I'm in the market for new Bluetooth headphones. So
That's such a diligent recommendation. I was expecting you to come up with something really subversive about this workspace situation.
No, and it's funny because everybody doesn't, I mean, there's like no one who likes it. And all the management was out of town when we moved into this building and into this new office. They were out of town for something and they came back on Monday morning and without even talking to any employees, they had a meeting about how can we fix this environment because no one's happy.
Wow, it sounds awful. I'm sorry.
Oh, it can be worse. A friend of ours, or a friend of mine, and a friend of the podcast, Beyond the Trope podcast, someone over there was telling me that they basically have glass between them and someone else, just a little layer of glass. So yeah, that's not good either.
No.
I just don't like it.
All right, Jacqueline, your new book is Miranda and Caliban, and it, as I said in the intro, it's a retelling of Shakespeare's The Tempest. So tell us about the day you realized that you wanted to retell The Tempest. Like, how did this come about?
You know, it had been in the back of my mind for quite a while. I reread The Tempest a few years ago, and in my memory, and I hadn't probably visited it since high school or college, it's this sort of frothy, charming, enchanted story about this benevolent magician on an island. And I reread it, and I'm like, holy crap. Prospero is really controlling, and he keeps his daughter in a state of virtual ignorance. He has Ariel and Caliban as in a state of virtual servitude, and he's hell-bent on vengeance. And I just thought, there is a really dark underbelly to this story. And the action of the play takes place in a single day, but they've been on this island for 12 years leading up to it. So I just started thinking about what went on during those 12 years. And that ultimately is the story I'm telling.
Now, what are the steps you take to go from that initial kind of idea to, you know, it seems like the main idea is that, like, all right, 12 years, let's fill in that gap. So what are the steps you take to fill in those gaps?
Starts with a pretty intensive rereading of the play itself, because I really wanted to work within the confines of it, and then deciding, you know, what's the spin I'm going to put on it. And we know from the play that Caliban was born to this witch Sycorax, who was exiled from Algeria, and then she died. And I thought, well, so this kid grew up completely alone on this deserted island. And I started looking into feral children and discovering things like, if a child hadn't possessed language in the first place, they weren't able to ever learn it. And Caliban learning language is one of the themes of the play. And so it just gave me a lot of good jumping off points for exploration.
And what are some of the other things you learned through, and what kind of research did you do? Obviously, you reread the play, but and you just spoke of the feral children, but any other interesting bits that come up in the research into this book?
Yeah, Renaissance magic, which is really, really complicated. Both the alchemy and astronomy are sort of the twin components of it. So I did a lot of reading of original source material, primarily a book called The Picatrix, which is probably what would have been most familiar to Shakespeare. And so much of it really doesn't adapt well to a narrative. I had to pick and choose what elements to use to endow my Prospero with the actual qualities of a Renaissance magician would possess.
So the next question I wanted to ask is, can you describe the types of conversations that you have with people in your life when you're working on a new book?
Yeah, I really tend to be a Fortress of Solitude style writer, so I don't talk about it a lot when I'm working on a book. Usually not until I'm finished and I'm developing a synopsis or an elevator pitch, so I know how to talk about it, but not until then.
And sort of the flip side of that question is, when you're in the midst of writing it, and maybe things aren't going well, what does your internal self-talk sound like?
Again, that's not an issue I deal with all that much. If I get blocked, I know enough to step away, walk away, get out in nature, let things work themselves out.
Do you ever do the thing where you just stare at the blank page and just start a sentence just to get it going?
Nope. Never
have to do that.
No. I mean, everybody's process is different. That's just not something that is part of mine.
Have you ever heard the thing, don't be afraid to suck?
Yes, and I have said that, and I think that's absolutely true.
Okay. John, do you know what we're talking about when we say that?
Not specifically. I mean, there's I've come across things like that before, for sure.
Jacqueline, do you want to tell them a little bit about that? It's a writer thing, definitely.
Well, it just, for me, it means allow yourself to make mistakes because you can go back and correct them.
Yep.
I recently read something, two things. One was by a guy named James Altucher, and one is by Seth Godin. And these guys are kind of marketing guys and mm-hmm. that kind of thing. But in terms of their ideas, what they come up with, one of the tricks that they do is that don't worry about coming up with good ideas. Just try to come up with bad ideas, almost purposefully come up with bad ideas. Just try to list 10 bad ideas every day, because it's almost like this idea creation muscle that you need to work on. And don't be so precious about them, because eventually there'll be some good ones that'll come out, but you'll probably come up with 10 bad ideas for every good idea. But if you're waiting for perfection, you'll come up with no ideas. So I don't know if that's a similar idea there.
Kind of, sort of.
Sounds more like a marketing thing than a novel writing thing.
They are different worlds, for sure.
Let me tell you have no idea.
Yes, Patrick works in marketing, so he knows what I'm talking about.
I do work in marketing, yes.
Now, every writer that we speak to has different methods for how they work. So I wanted to ask you, well, first of all, if you're a morning person or a night person, if you're a morning person, do you have a morning ritual? Do you do your writing in the morning? Do you have specific things that you go about? What do the first hour of your day look like? Unless you wake up really late. We know some authors that work all night and then wake up in the afternoon and have that kind of thing. So what does your morning look like, and what does your writing schedule, if you have one, look like?
Yeah, I do. And I'm so not a morning person.
Yay.
I get up in the morning, but first hour of my day is me trolling through the news and social media and just taking in material. Writing wise, anymore, since I've been doing it full time, 3 to 7 is kind of my sweet spot.
Mm. And do you have a page count or a word count that you try to hit?
I don't. I'm an edit as you go writer.
I am
so too. Every day starts with editing the previous day's work, and I can't move on until it's as good as I feel it can be.
I was going to ask John, you just asked that question, and I was at Superstars of Writing like a weekend ago or so, and they basically asked that question of all these authors that were up on the big panel, and David Farland was the first one to get asked, and he's the guy who wrote the Rune Lords and a bunch of other kind of stuff, and he said that he was a morning person and he gets up in the morning and he writes and he does this and that. He also talked about how he doesn't like to write at home. He likes to go places. He likes to travel. He likes to go somewhere outside of his house and travel and write and this and that. And then they asked Jim Butcher, and Jim Butcher said, well, I just want to say that he's nuts.
Yeah.
Getting up in the morning to write, no. He says the magic doesn't happen until the sun goes down. And then he said, and I have to have my spot. I have to have my space. It's my space. It's where I go, and that's where I write. Do you have a space, Jacqueline? Do you have
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
And when I was younger, I could write almost anywhere. Also, I could do it longhand in a notebook. I know, but anymore, no, it's got to be in my office. I cannot write in hotels and that sort of thing. And it's got to be within my happy zone time frame.
What software do you use for writing?
Just Microsoft Word. Mm-hmm. I know. And I hate it because they've made it more like they're trying to make it something designers would use. And designers aren't going to use freaking Word to design. But I tried some other Scrivener that's designed for writers, and I'm like, it's too fussy.
I always tell people, I teach people how to use Scrivener. And oh, okay. the first thing I tell them, the very first thing, and it's hilarious because it never fails. I say, if you treat Scrivener like Word, you're going to fail and you're going to be miserable and you're going to hate it and you're going to be so upset. And they look at me and they go, well, that's what happened. That's what I did. Like some random person was tagged on Twitter because someone who knows me, they were complaining about Scrivener, and someone who knows me says, well, you should ask Patrick about this. And I replied, the first thing I tell people is don't treat it like Word. You'll be miserable. And he said, that's exactly what I did. We should talk.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it was educational for me in that I found out I really don't want anything to get between me and the text. That's Mm-hmm. When I'm writing, that's all I want.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, everybody has a different system that they use, and
that's
now. So you said that you're in your office when you write, and you generally write at the same time every day. How about music? Do you write to music? And if so, is there any particular artists or albums that you go to with it?
Yeah, I don't. If I'm away from the office thinking about something I'm working on, I can do music. But not while I'm actually writing.
Yeah, it's that seems like a split. Some people need it silent, and mm-hmm. some people need music blasting the whole time. I know, like Stephen King will sit and listen to heavy metal for hours on end while he's writing. That's just his process. He listens to Metallica while he goes through it. So you're more of a need it to be quiet while you're.
I don't even need it to be absolutely silent. Although, again, that's something where I could tune out, jackhammers when I was writing in my 20s. But now, I prefer it to be silent. But if there is noise, music, or cacophony, I'll tune it out regardless. So there just isn't a point to having music on when I'm in the process.
Which authors, growing up that you read, or even later on, had the strongest influence on your writing?
The very first sort of adult book I read was The Persian Boy by Mary Renault. She wrote novels based in ancient Greece. And I was at camp, and I'd gone through all of the books I'd read, and I was horribly bored. And the counselor had this book, and I asked if I could read it. And she's like, I don't know, because I was 10, and it's from the point of view of a eunuch who... was in the household of Alexander the Great. And she finally let me read it. And I was a little sketchy on what a eunuch was, but I loved the book, and it brought this world to life for me. And so it's not fantasy in the classical sense, but historical fiction that may as well be, in that it brought the past to life. And her writing is actually really quite, clear and lyrical, and so one of my earliest influences, probably one of the strongest still.
Excellent. How about current authors or contemporaries of yourself? Is there anybody that you really like, that inspire you, or just that you enjoy reading?
An author who I do enjoy and admire, and most often recommend to fans of my own books, especially the Kushiel's legacy books, is Guy Gabriel Kay. Mm. Tagana is a wonderful standalone, good place to start. He does alternate historical fantasy as well, and draws a lot on mythology. And so I'm always happy to recommend his work. N.K. Jemisin is a author whose world building I've read and gone, oh man, that's some cool shit.
Yeah, I've read a couple of the N.K. Jemisin, the first book in the one series. I've read the first book in both of her series that are currently going right now, so I need to get back and finish those series. That's the problem when you're a fantasy and science fiction fan, is that there's so many series that it takes a long time to get through the said series. And by the time people listen to this, this will be out of date, but this morning, so we're recording this on Saturday, the John Scalzi books are all on sale today, where it's $2.99. So all the Old Man's War series books are all $2.99 plus, and then if it's like $3.99 for the audio, so like $7 for the audio and the ebook. Yeah, Patrick, I just dropped like $42 on John Scalzi books, because I read the first book and I really liked it. And I'm like, oh, this is a good deal, and it's the audio, and I'm just gonna do it.
Well, Tor needs to make back that advance they gave him. So.
Yes, exactly. So,
something you might not know about John Scalzi, he's quite a good DJ as well.
Oh, interesting.
Oh, yeah. We know Scalzi a little bit. Spent a little bit of time with him at a World Fantasy a couple years ago. But yeah, no, he's a multi-talented individual, that John Scalzi. For
John
sure.
Scalzi is a multi-talented individual who never replies to emails about podcasts.
Well, he's got a focus on the book. Okay, so along the same lines here, what is, if you give books as gifts, and it does not have to be a fiction book, it could be a nonfiction book, it could be anything. Is there a particular book that you've given frequently as a gift to people in your life?
There is, and sadly, I think it's now out of print. And this is one of my favorite books I've ever read. It's utterly obscure. It's called The Horse of Selene by Juanita Casey. And I only knew about it because when I graduated from college and had no idea what to do with my life, I took part in a work exchange program and ended up living in the UK, working in a bookstore in London for 6 months. And came across this book, which was recommended by one of my colleagues. And it's sort of like, it's all the poetry you love about James Joyce, but a lot more concise. So while it was still in print, I bought many copies of that and gave it away.
Well, that seems like a good one then, because now they're out there, and you know, they're if they're hard to find, I mean, you can always find that stuff on Amazon. But then sometimes you right. gotta pay through the nose to get it. You're talking about writing and all these different things. What is the worst advice that you hear being dispensed in your world? Could be writing, could be about something else, could just be a general life thing. But is there a particular piece of advice where you hear like, that's not true at all? Why are people keep saying that? What's a bit of advice that you would say is the worst advice that you hear people give?
There isn't one thing that's consistent, but recently I was talking with some young aspiring writers who had picked up a book of a how to write book. And one of the first things it told them was never edit as you go. Always get your first draft down. And as an edit as you go author, as we were just talking about, they're like, is that good advice? And I'm like, not necessarily.
It depends on the person, right?
Absolutely.
That's one of those things. It's like people give that advice. And then at the same time, I don't know, it's subjective. It really is. It depends on the person. I hate, because I was just at this huge seminar, and you had half the authors saying, oh, no, never edit. You have to push through. And the other half are going, no, you have to edit. You have to edit because you have to get it perfect. You have to get it right. You have to get it right the first time. I want a clean draft. My first draft has to be clean. And other people are like, no, the fourth draft has to be clean. It's subjective.
Yeah, it absolutely is. And it's something you can really only learn by doing.
Yeah.
So all the advice in the world, take it in, but then figure out what works for you.
Yeah. You know, an interesting bit that a coworker and I were talking about the Pixar movies the other day, and I read a book.
To Infinity and Beyond.
Right. And we were talking, and I read this book by Ed Catmull, who's one of the founders of Pixar. And they were talking about the process of making those movies, which was very different than I thought. Those movies incubate for years and years and years. And the first versions of those movies, by the time they are put out, are almost nothing like what the early versions were. They are very much, we go through it, and then we go through it again, and then we go through it again, and then we go through it again, and we try this, and we try that. And it's interesting being with animation, because I guess they have all sort of the test animation that they go through first. But I know with like Toy Story 2, that movie was completely redone. It was sort of done. And it was supposed to be a DVD release. It wasn't supposed to go out into the movies. And then they were like, no, this needs to be better. And they basically started it all over again and finished it quickly. But that's a not editing as you go. That's sort of a draft, another draft, another draft. And that's with working with a lot of people.
Yeah, too. I was going to say that's totally a collaborative process too. I think that's a whole other animal.
Yes,
and
absolutely.
John, you know the kid in the Toy Story movies?
Andy?
Yeah. You know that there's lots of fan theories out there that potentially he could be Obi-Wan Kenobi's son.
I had no idea.
Oh, wait, that's Rebels. Never mind. Go ahead.
Okay. Last question before we finish up. If you could, if you were to give a TED Talk about something that's outside of your main area of expertise, so wasn't
I know you were going to ask the TED Talk question. I got nothing.
That's fine. You can pass on that one. That's fine. Because sometimes we have these obscure bits of things that we're really into, and I was hoping you were going to unveil something that.
No, I mean, there are other. I'm a foodie. I love food, but qualified TED Talk level? No.
you're now a Google Hangouts expert after this, right?
Yes.
two in the past 5 years.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think that's a good place to wrap it up. So once again, I want to mention that you can go and get today, if you're listening to this on post day, February 14th, Valentine's Day. What a great Valentine's Day present this would be. It is Miranda and Caliban, and it's Jacqueline Carey's new book, and it is out there now, and it's out as a hardcover. It's been sitting here the whole time, Patrick, and I haven't even showed it. I usually like to flash the book up when we have our guests on. So there we go. Miranda Caliban, it is out now, and I'm sure it's out as an ebook. Do we know if it's out as an audiobook too, or is that going to be later, Jacqueline?
Ooh, I am not sure about that.
Yeah, sometimes the audiobooks come a little down the line. So go and check that out. You can always also check out her website, jacquelinecarey.com, and her Twitter at jcareyauthor. Jacqueline, are you going to be making any appearances at cons coming up?
Yeah, I will be it's an inaugural con, Heliosphere, in Tarrytown, New York, next month. I think it's March 10th through 12th. And then I'm scheduled to be at MarCon in Columbus, Ohio in May.
Very cool.
Excellent. Very good. And anything else that you want to let our listeners know about before we wrap it up? Any other projects or anything like that?
Well, I've got a backlog of 16 novels you can check out.
It's always a good place to start.
Yep.
And maybe those will, maybe they'll have a John Scalzi-like sale on those where I always feel like whenever they do those sales, I did that with the Jim Butcher books a couple of years ago where they put them all on sale one day and I'm like, I know I'm going to want to read these all. Okay. I'll just buy them all right now. So, that's how they get you, because it's like, it's such a good deal, I have to do it.
I know.
I get like that, because I'm like, because tomorrow I'm going to want to buy them, and then it's going to be 10 times the price, and I'm going to regret it. So I never regret buying books, so that's why I do it.
But, absolutely.
Yeah. All right, excellent.
And so you have to move.
Yes. Yeah. Then
well, the e-books.
I know, but e-books. See, I like to have the paper book too, and that's why I've always said I have to make more friends and new friends because my old friends will only help me move once.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
And then the next time they're like, wait. You have all those books, right? No, I can't help you.
Yeah. All right. For Patrick, I will say it for him because I'm sure he's going to be shy about it. But once again, his new book is out. It's Into the Fire, the Samantha Cain Volume 1. Go and check that out. It's available as ebook and as a print book. No audiobook yet, but that
trade
will be coming.
Trade paperback, John.
Trade paperback. There you go. Trade paperback and ebook. It is available now. I bought it on Amazon for $5.99, so you should too. There you go. And for us as the Functional Nerds, again, if you dig the show, please consider becoming one of our backers over at patreon.com/functionalnerds. Patrick, anything else before we wrap it up?
I just want to thank Jacqueline for coming on. This was a lot of fun.
Yes.
Thanks so much for having me, you guys.
And thank you for being patient through the tech support. Sometimes people get a little flustered.
You're breaking the magic. The listeners don't know. They don't know.
Oh, yeah. That was all edited out. I'm sorry. Anyway. All right, everybody. Well, have a great week, and we'll see you next time.
Sunspoke. I'd like to say thank you on behalf of the group and ourselves, and I hope we pass the audition.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.
Would you like a chili, baby?
I'm the one in the middle.